Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out tonight for NXT Roadblock. Tonight is March 7th, 2023, and here with me to talk about Roadblock is Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, say hey.
Hey, everybody. I'm Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_253. And I was not on the report tonight, Kelly was, but you can find me there usually every other week.
All right. So we had a main event with Mako Satomura versus Roxanne Perez for the NXT Women's Championship. The match itself was great. However, that really isn't the main talking point here. The main talking point was the angle after the match where Mako Satomura was showing a sign of respect to Roxanne Perez by raising her hand after Perez bested her and retained her women's title when Perez seemingly passed out. I believe it is an angle, and as Bruce said to me on Twitter before we went online, he thinks he connected the dots of this angle. So, Bruce, what dots did you connect?
I just remember that during the match, Booker T kept emphasizing how many times Mako Satomura had hit Roxanne Perez in the back of the head. And while it may have just been some, you know, she overexerted herself for sure in the match, as part of the angle, but I think they're also playing a concussion angle here because she took two Scorpio Risings, one on the outside, a bunch of nasty kicks to the head too. So I think that is what they're playing at with this, is having a concussion angle. And I think HBK had a concussion angle early in his, not early in his career, but sometime in the mid-90s. So if anyone can, I guess, work one of these, it would be him, or know how to work one. But
yeah,
if you go back to the match, Booker T kept just saying, "Oh, that's four. I thought it was a triple to the back of her head. It was a four shot to the back of her head." All these different things like that. So I think they were really trying to sell the aspect of her getting hit in the head as a detrimental aspect to what was going to happen, and then that came to bear at the end there. So.
Now that you point that out, I mean, I definitely noticed him saying that, but it didn't click to me. Now that you point that out, I think that makes sense. I think that definitely makes sense. I mean, it clearly looked like an angle. Like I said to you, you, Tom and Kelly on Twitter, in our four-way chat, I'm like, in no real medical situation would HBK be the one applying an oxygen mask to the patient, which we clearly saw on TV tonight. It definitely looked like it was, to an untrained eye, I guess, definitely looked like it could have been, you know, an actual real world situation. But, I think that makes sense. I don't know where they're necessarily going to go with that. And I don't know how I feel about it really, because I really would have liked to have seen her have an awesome celebration after this win. I mean, she just basically defeated the final boss of NXT, and you know, now, you know, she's got this kind of medical angle. I feel like if she had more of a dominant win, but if she had like that crowning moment, you know, and the show went off the air with her and Mako, Mako holding her hand high, you know, holding Perez's hand high and that showing that sign of respect, I feel like that probably would have gotten her over, or is going to get her over more in the long run. But I'm open to see where they're going to go with this and how they present it. I've liked the way they've presented Roxanne Perez as champion for the most part. So I'm going to give them a week and see if they can explain this away. I haven't really had time to fully process yet what's going on, but I'm not sure if I'm on board, but I want to see where this is going to go. Kind of take a wait and see approach.
I think that this is a way to write off Perez for now when there's no clear challenger for her. And
I just hope they don't. And I hear you, but I just hope they don't have her relinquish the title either.
Well, so I think this is going to be a way for them to kind of work in a number one contenders tournament. You could, and then also have a storyline of, well, can she make it in time for Stand and Deliver, you know? And if not, then what does it mean for the number one contenders? So you could have the semifinals happen 2 weeks out so that if she is okay, you can have the match in storyline. You can have the number one contenders match the week on the go-home show. Or if it doesn't, or if it's storyline, she's not going to make it back, then you can have that number one contenders match on Stand and Deliver. Now, I think what they could also do here is sort of, again, because he's there, kind of an HBK Razor Ramon from 95 with the IC title, only kind of a different circumstance here. Maybe they sort of have an interim champion tournament, and then after a while, and the interim championship that final could be at Stand and Deliver to crown that champion. And then
I was actually just thinking the same thing.
Yeah, and then you could have Roxanne Perez whenever she comes back, it, almost in a CM Punk John Cena situation, that's a little different as well, but come out at the end of, not Stand and Deliver, but at whatever the one after Stand and Deliver is going to be, you can have her come out at the end of that and have that moment of those two holding up the belts to each other to end your show, because that's definitely a ready for TV moment, going to be on all the packages, a good picture for still shots.
And
so,
and it's not something that they've never done in NXT before. I mean, we did have the Cruiserweight interim champion for what, almost a year.
And it's,
you know?
They do it in professional wrestling. AEW did this not too long ago as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, it's not unheard of. Yeah.
Well, and if you watch MMA, if you're a fan of MMA, this happened quite frequently, especially in the early 2010s era. But I think that is how they could go, and I think it's a good call, because if you don't have a contender right there for Roxanne Perez, and you just have her come out, and okay, you can have her beating people every, but then you're hurting who could be a contender, and then what does that do for her? I think doing this and having her, so let's talk about the match real quick, all right? So I think I don't think the match was as smooth as maybe as you did, but I think the story of the match was told well, in that Perez came in wanting to, she was a little more physical to begin with than she was in their first match, but it still wasn't enough, and she had to learn throughout the match to keep bringing it out and keep bringing it more. And maybe because of that, she pushed through all those shots to the head when she shouldn't have. And in the end, you know, she did get that victory with the stacked roll-up. But what they did during the match through that storytelling and with her kicking out of Scorpio Rising, and then at the end, the whole angle, I think what they've done is get her to be off TV in a way that doesn't seem arbitrary, and also in a way that when she does come back, she's going to receive a massive pop because of how this happened. So I think looking at it from a, if you're just looking at it from a tonight, it looks a bit odd, but I think if you try and take a more long-term view of this and of the character and of the women's division as a whole, I think this may have been the best decision they could have done in terms of creating new contenders and keeping Perez fresh in certain sense. So I'm going to, like you said, hold out a bit, but I think I'm more optimistic on how things went down than you were.
I wouldn't say I'm high or low on it. I mean, it's yeah, like I think maybe you are a little more optimistic than I am, but I'm not necessarily poo-pooing it either. If they give me a compelling story like you've laid out here, something like that, I'm all for it. Absolutely. You know, I really like the idea of like an interim champion. It's, you know, obviously it's nothing that, it's just something we're talking about. We're spitballing right now, but it's an idea I like, because I mean, I feel like there's just that built-in story there, whoever that interim champion is. You know, obviously they can challenge one another to unify those titles once she comes back. And I think, you know, like you said, it would definitely be a feel good story. It's going to be in all the video packages and everything. As far as the match itself goes tonight, I thought this was a good match. However, I'm not nearly as high on Roxanne Perez as I think everybody else is. I like her. I think she's, you know, a great wrestler, I don't necessarily see her. There's something missing for her as a champion. And I've said that before. She's had times where I feel like she's earned it, in my mind anyway. And it makes sense, you know, where she's champion and all of that. At least, I mean, obviously in story, it makes sense, but I'm talking just kind of like in, you know, wrestling always has that feel, right? And for me right now, and really for the majority of her title reign, I haven't felt like she has been championship material. Let's put it that way. You know, I don't think she's nearly as smooth in the ring as everybody necessarily says she is. And I think that kind of came out here tonight. It was a good match for what my expectations of Roxanne Perez are, I guess. But in terms of, like, I think what everybody else's are, yeah, it was certainly a bit of a, it wasn't nearly as smooth. But yeah, let's give any follow up or anything on that, or should we go to the phone lines, kind of open discussion up to the rest of everybody?
Okay.
All right, let's do that. So let's go. Where is my tab with Blog Talk open? All right, let's go over to the phone lines and talk with Ryan and see what Ryan has for us tonight. Ryan, what'd you think of the show?
It was a eventful show, as expected, as a show called Roadblock should be.
Yes, and they certainly let us know it was a roadblock for everybody coming up to stand and deliver here, as Bruce pointed out to me earlier in the night.
The amount of times they're getting the word roadblock into this random discussion was ridiculous. It was annoying. Okay, sorry, Ryan.
The most egregious, I think, was Bron Breakker when he came back out to talk to Carmelo Hayes. But, yeah, it was bad throughout the whole night. Anyway, Ryan, what do you have for us tonight?
My first question is on Roxanne Perez incident that happened. My only one that thought it could have been a heart attack is what they were trying to do, or you think not too many people thought that way?
If they did that with Damar Hamlin happening so soon in the NFL, I think that even for WWE, we criticize their lack of awareness at times, but even that's a bit too much. I think, again, with Booker T so emphatically emphasizing how much he's been hit in the back of the head, I think the story is a concussion and not a heart attack. But the fact that you're bringing it up probably means you're not the only one who thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. My mind didn't necessarily go heart attack. You know, I didn't really know what medical condition to necessarily think about. You know, I was just kind of thinking, oh, she collapsed. I mean, that's something we've heard in wrestling many times. You know, somebody collapsed backstage, especially like in the early 90s, things like that. So that was kind of where my mind went. I like what Bruce laid out earlier with the, you know, concussion angle. You know, especially where Booker T was kind of alluding to that throughout the course of the night, or throughout the course of the match, rather. That's probably, I feel like that makes the most sense. Obviously, they could, you know, they could throw us a completely different, you know, story next week. But at least for right now, that's what I'm going with. That's what I'm going with. Ryan.
Well, the reason I thought maybe if it is a storyline, I don't know if you remember, back in the 80s, Fritz Von Erich did something similar, and I think that ended up being a heart attack. It just sort of reminded me of that incident.
Sure, but you also saw her moving and talking a bit, I think, for the heart attack. Granted, I've never had a heart attack or seen anyone who's had a heart attack. But
you're the doctor.
A different kind of doctor. But I feel like that would be... Or they wouldn't be as able to just move and talk as freely like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I completely agree with that. You know, if it was a heart attack, I mean, I've never witnessed anybody have one, but I mean, from what I have been told anyway, you're not really, especially for a bad one anyway, you're really not doing a whole lot of talking. Ryan, anything else for us tonight?
Yeah, I have a question on that jailhouse match that opened up the show. Has that ever been done before? I know we've seen the Mountie and the Big Boss Man before do some of these in actual jail cell, and I've seen matches where you know, in TNA where they lock you up like in a penalty box. It's very similar to that, but never seen really anything where you get locked up in a real jail cell in a match.
So I honestly don't know, and I tried to do a little bit of Googling on this earlier in the night, and I came up short, and I kind of just gave up and went back to writing the hits and misses, because they did mention at the beginning of this match on commentary, I think it was Vic Joseph said that this was the first time in 30 years that a jailhouse match had taken place in the WWE, albeit this one being no DQ. So I don't know what match he was alluding to. Bruce, I'm not sure if you know or if you looked it up, but I did try to actually get an answer to that, and I don't have one at the moment. Well, you know, what match that actually was. But according to commentary, this was the second jailhouse match in WWE. I wish they would have told us or at least given us a hint what that match was.
Question, I don't know. I've asked this question before, but with the Kiana James angle, you think it could be a big body hobby, like sang her a song and now she's infatuated with him, or do you think something else is going on?
You know, I don't know, but I like that. I like that. I'm not sure, to be honest. I'm kind of, with that angle, like, I've gotten it wrong this whole time. Like, you know, when Keanu was talking to the person on the phone, I'm thinking it's some ex-lover or this, that, the other thing. Like, my mind's going all over the place. And both Kelly and Bruce are like, Nate, it's her brother. Come on, it's her brother. And I'm like, I don't think it's her brother. And it was her brother. So I'm probably not the best one to ask. But, I mean, Bruce, do you have any idea who, you know, where this angle might be going?
Yeah, so... One, I think we're getting a Henley and Brooks love angle now after their interaction in the back and how Henley got jealous when Brooks answered the phone.
Okay, I got those vibes too. I did get those vibes. I'm glad you said that.
Beyond that, it seems like now that Kiana was having her brother as the sort of what's the word I'm looking for? The doppelganger for her actual love interest, who's not Brooke Jensen. And with that, I wonder if they're going to use this to debut someone. I'm not sure if Big Body Javi is someone that I want associating with the Women's Tag Team Champion, just because his act is so far down the card. His act is basically a worse version of Kona, or a more comedic version of Kona Reeves' gimmick. And
yeah.
Kona Reeves was better. His gimmick was better. So I don't think you want to have that bottom of the card. Now, I think it'd be hilarious if it was Dragon Lee, but I don't think you want Dragon Lee kind of that low on the card for someone coming in. So I wonder if this could be someone like, you know, maybe it's Damon Kemp. Who knows? Or it could be someone that they're going to debut. But I don't think it's Big Body Javi, because I just don't think – his thing has been with Mackenzie. It hasn't been with Kiana. I'm not sure if he's even had an interaction. I think he's had more interactions with Tatum Paxton and Ivy Nile than he's had with Kiana James. So if anything,
you're right.
His thing tends to be more with trying to win over Mackenzie Mitchell and not with Kiana James. So I don't think it's Big Body Javi, but that's hilarious. And the only reason I want to see it is because it'll make me laugh. But beyond that, I think it would be a bad decision to go down.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I mean, it would make me laugh for sure, but it's not really. I don't think it would be doing Kiana James or even Jensen and Briggs, for that matter, any favors. To kind of be associated with Big Body Javi, unless they were completely to change his Big Body Javi's like gimmick and kind of turn him into a, you know, more robust and fleshed out character that we can get behind, but I don't see that happening either. I don't know. I don't know who that would necessarily be, but to debut somebody, but I don't think it's going to be a Big Body Javi. Ryan, back to you.
I have a question on, they're really pushing that Batista Triple H documentary for Sunday. Is that pretty much like a green light for Batista being announced in the Hall of Fame for Monday, because they're really running out of time, because I know they're selling tickets for that Hall of Fame event.
You know, I hope they announce somebody on the, you know, for the Hall of Fame soon. You know, I don't know if it necessarily is a lock for Batista for the main event, or main event for the Hall of Fame. But I really, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, you know, considering he's, you know, big time actor and everything at this point, I mean, it kind of almost feels like the time for him to go in. But obviously until they announce something, you know, concrete, you know, it's all, everything's just kind of speculation. You know, there's certainly been a lot of talks about that. You know, I've seen quite a bit of, you know, rumblings, rumors online, the rumor mill going anyway. But I don't think there's anything necessarily concrete. Bruce, anything on Batista in the Hall of Fame?
I think Batista's been the rumored name for this year for a while.
Yeah.
But I think the issue with him is probably the issue with anything with The Rock is making the schedules line up. And if the schedules don't line up, then I don't think they're going to have him there because he's someone, I mean, these are all done in person, and you're definitely going to want to have him in person to do this. And he's one of the most popular stars of the aughts, especially now with his acting career, too. He probably has a lot of fans outside of wrestling who may, just because of him, want to attend or see it if they're in the area, if they have, you know, partners or family members who are wrestling fans. So I think their only issue is if the schedules will line up or not because of, you know, he is in high demand. He's in a lot of blockbuster, not just blockbuster films, but a lot of, he's probably the best actor out of the wrestlers turned actors in terms of actual acting skill. And you saw it during his run as an actor too, the little nuances, the abilities to go from face to heel, his facial expression. So he'd be great. But if they don't, I think someone like Victoria would be really good to be as one of the headliners because she was one of the great women's wrestlers during a time in WWE when women's wrestling and women who could wrestle weren't necessarily the in demand. And yet she created a niche for herself and is still remembered as one of the better wrestlers of the last 20, 30 years. So I think she could be someone that they look at if, and I know she's not as big a name as Batista, but you know, a lot of wrestling fans, a lot of women's wrestling fans are going to remember her name and they really want to be there for someone like her. So if not Batista, I'd go for someone like Victoria.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think Victoria is deserving. I'm looking it up right now. I don't think she's signed anywhere. I think she actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think she just recently retired. So I think she'd be, you know, certainly eligible to go in the Hall of Fame in terms of like, you know, contract status with other companies and blah, blah, blah. You know, again, yeah, I don't know if she'd be, I don't know if I'd want to see her as a, okay, let me rephrase that. Not that I wouldn't want to see her as a headliner, but I don't know if I see her as a headliner for the Hall of Fame either. I don't know who that would be either. You know, who else I can think of off the top of my head, other than Batista. I don't know. I feel like it is strange to me that, you know, here we are, we're what, 25, 30 days, something like that away from WrestleMania. And we don't have we don't have any names for the Hall of Fame. Usually, you know, we at least know something at this point. So, but yeah, we'll obviously we'll see what happens in the coming weeks and hopefully people start getting named because I don't know. I personally like watching the Hall of Fame. Some people just think it's boring. I don't know. I like it. I find it fun.
I don't think I've watched the Hall of Fame in at least 20 years.
I haven't watched one live in a few years, but I do like going back and watching them. I you know, I don't know. Just something about,
I've seen
kind
certain
of seeing
speeches.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't actually watched the full ceremony.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I don't think a lot of people necessarily do. All right, Ryan, anything else for us or shall we move on? I think we do have, I think we've got Darrell as well in the queue.
Well, the only thing I have for you is I don't know if you saw it, but Victoria did wrestle a match a couple months ago for Impact, but she didn't really do too much wrestling because Janelle Shaw, I believe, went tag her into the Duff Dolls match that she was doing. I don't know if it was an injury or if she didn't want to take any bumps or why that was, but I know I did see her briefly in Impact in January.
Yeah, I vaguely remember when that happened because I didn't see the match, but I vaguely remember listening to a podcast, and I don't remember what podcast it was, but them talking about her retiring after that. I could be completely remembering wrong, but something in the back of my head is saying that. And according to, at least according to Wikipedia, there's nothing listed as, you know, her being, her being affiliated with the brand right now, or signed as a brand. So, or signed to a company, signed with the company. So, we'll see.
Thanks for taking the call.
All right, Ryan, thank you very much. As always, let's go to Darrell. Darrell, how we doing, man? What'd you think of the show?
How y'all doing today?
Can't complain, man. Can't complain. What
Can't
you
complain
got for
either.
Us?
Can't not too much. Not too much, man. Trying to see what I'm going to be expecting when I go to the NXT show, WrestleMania weekend, because I got tickets to that and nights of WrestleMania.
Oh, stand and deliver?
Yes, sir.
All right. Good man.
Got to when it first came out, since I was going to be there. So, yeah.
Excellent, man. Excellent.
Mania.
Enjoy it. Yeah.
But yeah,
that's awesome.
But tonight, tonight to me, the show didn't leave anything for you to, it wasn't memorable. And a few of the NXT shows been like this for a while, where you don't have memorable stuff that you can point back to or you can go back to, like shows of old. And I really wanted the Tony D'Angelo and T-Bar show to match to be something like that. But with all the interference and he stacks holding him in the thing with him and everything, Tony D, just did me some type of way. What did you guys think about that match, and what was your expectation for it in the long run?
So my expectation for that match was the bar for me was set really low. I did not think that was going to be a good match. It was better than I thought it was going to be, but it's not saying it was necessarily great either. I think they used the gimmick well to kind of hide a lot of D'Angelo's weaknesses, and Dijak too, I guess, to a point. But I think mostly D'Angelo. And I also give them credit for, trying something different, with this jailhouse match. As we were talking about with Ryan, it seems like this is the second time they've done this stipulation in WWE. Clearly not in a very long time. They said on commentary with, it's been at least 3 decades. But I like the fact they're trying something different. We've seen it with the fight pit, where they tested the fight pit out in NXT, brought it to the main roster. There's been a couple, I think one or two other matches as well that have also War Games. Thank you. Yeah, War Games, the big one. They tested out in NXT, brought up the main roster. So we might see that with this. I feel like probably not. I like the other two stipulations much more, but how are you going to know if you don't try? So I certainly give him credit for that. I don't know if I'm necessarily a fan of something like this. You need to like lock your opponent in the back of an ambulance or in a jailhouse or whatever. It just, they seem like underwhelming finishes to me. So I don't know. I'm, it's almost like a last man standing match, just knocking somebody down for the count of 10. It's not very, there's not a lot of drama there. There can be, I guess, with trying to lock somebody inside of a cage or an ambulance or something, but I think it's harder to do. They did an okay job here. Again, nothing that, I don't think it's going to be a match like you were talking about anybody's going to be talking about for, years to come here. But for what they had, and what they did, it was okay. I'm glad to see D'Angelo get the win. I think he needed a strong win. I can't remember the last time he's had a very strong win over somebody. If he has had,
that's exactly why he should have lost.
Why do you think he should have lost then?
Remember when Dijak was returning? What were we saying about what he was going to do?
Dude, I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
His trajectory.
Probably, if I don't know, if I had to guess, we were probably saying he was going to stomp through people.
Do you have more
This is going to be a remake of Tony D'Angelo?
Y'all
say this is going to be a remaking of him since he was coming out for that horrible...
coming off the T-bar.
From Vince.
Yeah.
So then why the hell are you having him lose to someone who hasn't won an actual feud in basically the whole time he's been there, aside from, what, Pete Dunne? Tommaso Ciampa?
I hadn't quite gotten there yet. I was going to bring that up. I hadn't quite gotten there yet. Like I said, I was glad to see D'Angelo get a win because I feel like he's needed a win. But at the same time, I don't know what that necessarily means for Dijak here. Dijak had been very strong. I think he's been undefeated since coming back as Dijak, if I'm not mistaken. So to see him get beat by...
No, he lost to Wesley.
That's right. He did lose to Wesley. That's right. But to see him lose to somebody, not only the second loss in a row, but then to see him lose to somebody like D'Angelo, who has just consecutively lost big match, big after big match, opportunity after opportunity, as well as, Stax. I mean, Stax has, lost the majority of his matches. And he's gone from having, eight people in his faction down to, two. I'm not very happy to see Dijak get the loss here. That I hadn't quite finished my sentence when you chimed in, but I think we're pretty much on the same page with that. Bruce, let me throw back to you.
The match itself was there. Really just reminds me of basically King of the Mountain having the penalty box and stuff. I think this match. So, do you remember when Wesley had his open challenge and D'Angelo was the one who came out with Stax, and then what happened after that?
Off the top of my head, I don't.
So Dijak came out and grabbed D'Angelo from the back, behind the neck. And then Stax, instead of going after Wesley because he's loyal, he went and helped out D'Angelo with Dijak, didn't get his. All right, so I'm sitting there thinking this match could have ended at least 5 minutes earlier, because if he's all about loyalty, then when Dijak took him from behind and was inside the cage, he should have just freaking locked and slammed the cage door shut on him and Dijak send the match, but he didn't. And then they both took a lot more punishment because of that. So, yeah. Beyond that fact, I think what Kelly said last week is just reinforced here. And he's been saying it for a while, but if you want to get anything out of Stax, you have to get him away from D'Angelo or something, because the one with potential is Stax, and it's not D'Angelo. If D'Angelo does what I've been advocating for him to do for a long time, which is channel his amateur wrestling, kind of like when Kurt Angle went heel, and just do a lot of that, I think he'd be a lot better off. But oh, and the big thing, if he just changes his gear and makes it look like more standard wrestling gear or even a singlet, I think he would come off so much better than he does right now. At least more legitimately in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, some sort of gear. I don't know if I'd want to see him in a singlet with the Dawn of NXT gimmick, but something different. Definitely something different. I don't know what that gear is, but yeah, I'm certainly there with you. One of the things, and I brought this up on the show too before, but one of the things that I think really holds D'Angelo back right now is the fact that Roman Reigns is doing the Dawn gimmick 1,000 times better than anybody else could ever do. This is a very watered down version of the Bloodline gimmick. Any sort of mafioso gimmick, I guess. But, when you have the Bloodline going, and that is the biggest angle in recent memory, to hit the company, it's really hard. Professional wrestling, for that matter. That damn good point. It's really hard to follow that and try to be something like that. If, you know, and that wasn't even something that I had thought about up until, you know, maybe a couple months ago. But I think that is also something that's really holding D'Angelo back. I think he needs to pivot a bit. You know, like you said, lean into that amateur wrestling background. You know, we've talked about that a few times as well. I think that'd be a great way for him to kind of, you know, grow and develop his character. Stacks, I agree. I think he is the one with potential. Anytime I see him in the ring, I'm kind of blown away more and more by him just being the sidekick to D'Angelo. You know, D'Angelo might have a bit more charisma, but I don't know. I think Stacks could certainly hold his own. I do hope they break him off from D'Angelo sooner rather than later. Darrell, let's head back to you.
Okay, and I'm surprised because you guys had stated earlier that you heard that somebody said that this was the first time that this match has ever been DQ'd. That y'all didn't remember the SummerSlam 91 match between the Monty and Big Boss Man Jailhouse match. That's where they had this match. Because
there's a reason I didn't want to remember it.
but this, when you remember history, you won't be doomed to repeat it. You know, we see in this NXT, the NXT that Shawn Michaels is putting on, ain't nothing but the early 90s from 90 to 93, and all these people are nothing but character actors. You might as well say like Repo Man and stuff like that, because Dijak is the Big Boss Man, and instead of having a Canada cop as the Monty, you're just having a criminal, a character criminal from off of one of the old Godfather movies. And the reason why you feel like Roman Reigns is doing it better, because he's not doing the Godfather itself. He's just being himself and having his family around and giving themselves a name and treatment how a family would treat each other. Because you have some people in the family that manipulate people. You see that in today's world when you see with like the issue with John Morant and stuff like that, where the kid start being the breadwinner, now he go all off. And nobody in his family can tell him what to do or stop him from doing anything stupid because he the breadwinner. He the head of the table and stuff like that. So, but other than that, another thing was I know y'all was talking about that main event, and I know y'all was saying y'all was trying to see what it was. I was thinking that it was somebody who just gave it all and left off an exhaustion because hopefully they weren't trying nothing with DeMar Hamlin type of incident and stuff like that, not even playing with concussions, because I hate when people even play with concussions. But I want to know how is this is going to lead to into a story with whatever they have her going into next, with probably with Tiffany Stratton, Daddy's Girl, another character actor remake, when they had Trish Stratus playing Daddy's Girl type of character with Vince McMahon. Back when Stephanie had beat her up and kicked her out and stuff like that before Trish became the Trish that people liked. So what do you guys think? How can you turn this around and turn this into a story? Because right now her title run has been lackluster. It's not because of herself. It's because of the story that they put her in and the thing that they get her to work off of. And I'm pretty sure she's just willing to do whatever was told.
So, you know, we talked about this a little bit, you know, with where they could, you know, potentially go with this. I think it really all depends on what they do with this angle. You know, if they kind of go away that, you know, we laid out Bruce, you know, Bruce mostly laid out, you know, with like an interim champion, do some sort of a, you either, well, it could either be an interim champion or, you know, have it while she's off TV, have some sort of a number one contenders match, you know, or tournament to crown a number one contender for when Perez comes back. You know, if it was going to be Tiffany, that's going to be the next contender, which, you know, would certainly make sense. You know, she could be the one to win, you know, one of those matches, you know, whether it be the number one contender, or if they were to go an interim championship route, I think a number one contender would probably be the more, I would tell you, if I was a betting man, I'd go with, you know, number one contender over interim champion, I guess is what I should say. But they could certainly go either way or come up with something completely different. But I think that might be a good way to get to Tiffany Stratton if that was the way they were going to go. Bruce, any way to elaborate on that?
Well, who's a good heel to have across your baby face returning to hold that title up against after going down like that in her last match? Tiffany Stratton. I think she's the one person who's thus far made it known that she wants that title. Maybe Zoe Stark, but I remember Tiffany Stratton specifically saying that she wants to be NXT Women's Champion. She's coming for whoever. And she name-dropped both Satomura and Perez. And I think Stark only name-dropped Satomura. So I think her goal right now is more of just going after Satomura, which gives her something to do after all of this with Roxanne Perez and makes her look like even more of a badass. But, yeah, I think just the only thing to add to my point is Tiffany Stratton is probably the best person heel-wise to have standing across from Roxanne Perez when she does make her thunderous babyface return, whatever that may be, to set up their match at whatever takeover, PLE, whatever that call is going to be.
Yeah, I agree. Bruce, or not Bruce, Terrell.
Well, I wish they would bring in some of the people who they got waiting in the wings. Like, you got a PO champion that I think you could build around and have a lot of these people coming after that you're not doing nothing with, like Blair Davenport or something like that. So, I wish they would bring somebody like that in. More intriguing since my favorite women champion of all time, y'all done put her with a spooky witch character that I don't even think will shake on the main roster. And this is what be my next thing. We have a lot of that people not even paying attention to. We have a lot of NXT people who just sitting in the wings, I think, who's supposed to be called up, but ain't really been caught up because they have nothing too much to do with them, like the Cora Jays and the Cameron Grimes and people and more like that, who just sitting there out. So I'm saying this to state. I know they finally announced and we're getting Melo versus Braun. I'm hoping that Melo win it. I know some people want to see him go up, and I understand about the money and stuff like that. I wish they would pay them more, but I really don't want him to go up and have to get straddled with nothing to do like some before him or get put into a fake reboot of a Nation of Domination angle, which I hate that people always ask for with Almas and stuff like that. But would you prefer to see him go up as of right now, or do you want to see him win this match and maybe make Braun turn heel so he can show us something and not – because he's not showing us nothing right now?
Oh, if Braun loses, he's going up to the – he's going to Raw SmackDown.
Yeah, I think whoever loses is probably going up. Now, granted, we say that all the time, but I think it makes the most – I think it makes sense. Whoever loses is going up. If – this is the way I want to see it. I don't know if this is necessarily the way it's going to happen, but this is what I want to see. I would like to see Breaker lose, and I would like to see Melo have a decent run with the NXT title. We've talked about this before on the show, and this is the way I've kind of wanted to see this go for a while. I want to see Melo be the one to dethrone Breaker and be the face of NXT. He's already kind of been the face of NXT for a while. He's called himself the A-champion and all of that. But he hasn't actually been, the NXT champion, the quote actual face, if you will, of the company, or the brand anyway. So I'd like to see him carry that torch, and I'd like to see him have more of a meaningful title reign than Bron Breakker had. And Breakker, he's had two reigns. I never think of Bron Breakker unless I'm actively thinking of Bron Breakker as champion, and I hate it when that's the case with a champion on any brand. Like, you want that person to be relevant and have a meaningful reign and all of that. So I'm hoping Carmelo can take the NXT title and do with it what he did with the North American title and make it feel like the most important thing in the world. I'm sure Bruce may bring this up, but you know, if you're bringing up money and things like that, you know, he'd make more money going up to the main roster, which I probably would, but I don't know if it's necessarily the best move of the career right now. I think having him be in NXT, being that champion and being that long, like when I say long-term, I'm saying maybe six months to a year, have that awesome reign down there, then move up. He's still young. He's got plenty of time. So it's not like he needs to just all of a sudden, you know, get up to the main roster and kind of kickstart that career. I'd like to see him be that face, be that NXT champion, and then move up, hopefully, in a meaningful spot. And as long as Triple H is still in charge of creative when that happens, I'm pretty hopeful that he's going to do Carmelo right. Bruce, let me throw over to you.
Do I want Carmelo to stay on NXT? I want him to be the next Johnny Gargano because that's the show that I cover, and he definitely makes the show much better. But he's definitely someone who – he's a little undersized for what they used to have or what they used to like with Vince McMahon. But with Triple H after the helm, it's probably different. But he is bigger than Johnny Gargano. And beyond that, I think he has more of what makes you successful in WWE than Johnny Gargano had, in terms of he has his charisma and his presence, I think, are things that Johnny Gargano just doesn't quite have. Definitely the better wrestler of the two, especially technically, but that's not to diminish Carmelo Hayes as a wrestler at all, because he's definitely a good wrestler. It's just that they're different types of wrestlers. I bring Gargano up because you know, he not only was in NXT for a long time, but he was also made his return to the show, which I'm sure we'll get to later. I feel like, again, the loser is going to move. I feel like at this point, I think because if I've read things correctly, Breaker has been on Main Event and some live shows recently. So as is always start, Cora Jade is nowhere near ready to be on Raw or SmackDown. She will not. No, she's not ready. She needs more time at NXT. If they call her up or if they move her to Raw or SmackDown, I feel like she's going to be in that Liv Morgan, Lacey Evans boat, Dana Brooke boat, where the potential you could see, but they just didn't have enough time to develop before they were called to. They can't do that here with a lot of these wrestlers, especially after the transition from or to and from 2.0. I think, excuse me, if anything, it's going to be an NXT reign with Carmelo Hayes. He's probably going to have feuds with the likes of people like Tyler Bate. And I think Breaker is going to be probably on Raw because there's more of a place to hide his deficiencies there than on SmackDown.
And the mute button strikes again. I think that probably makes the most sense in terms of for him going to Raw or SmackDown. Nothing necessarily to disagree with there. Darrell, let me throw back to you.
Yeah, I hope that Melo wins because I want to see an old-fashioned deal. You got Dragon Lee coming in, who I'm pretty sure they're going to give a rocket to. And I know that match will be amazing and awesome and stuff like that. So I want them to see them work their way into it and do one of those deals and build up. Hopefully you get Melo with the title and you can reboot a slight reboot of this whole NXT thing just so we can get memorable characters. Because based on what I've seen, even if you pull somebody like Braun up, he's not going to get the Austin Theory because, to me, his talent is less than Austin Theory. And people just cream John Cena Barrett Austin Theory for his deficiencies and put it out there and stuff like that. And the only person on NXT right now who could be even considered better than Austin Theory is Melo. And if you don't have a 6 months run for him where you doing something with him consistently on Raw or SmackDown, it don't matter which show, you just going to get lost in the wind, and you'll be in the territory of the Johnny Garganos, the Hit Rolls, and the rest of the Legado members who's sitting there and not doing nothing. And all you could be with Cameron Grimes, not even on the show, or the Corey Jade, not in the show, just sitting back and catering, and even more. So I don't really want to see that. I don't want to wish that evil on none of these guys on NXT, because I feel like they've been led astray right now. But just hoping that they do something better and just build an expectation for these guys, because when they come up to that main roster, the main roster is a different set of breed. And those people, if you don't show them something immediately, they'll not respond to you, and you get no response up there, they're going to pull you off TV quick and fast and not even going to play with you. So, especially when they trying to build some people, and they got more people coming in, like a Jay White or Kenny Omega or stuff like that, or whoever. So, but my last
they're
thing
not going
would
to NXT.
Get,
neither of those two will go to NXT.
Oh,
and
I ain't
think
saying
the whole
NXT. I'm talking about going to the main roster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Why I'm
this
saying nobody from NXT really would have a chance since they're bringing in outside people. So you wouldn't get that.
Sure.
Yeah, Triple H there. You wouldn't get Triple H's attention, because his attention would be those guys building that top of the card. And you're transitioning from Roman Reigns, so your main focus probably going to be on probably Cody Rhodes. So you'll be left in the wind. But my last thing for you guys will be, I seen another board match from Braun Breaker. I hate that they put the Creeds with him and stuff like this. None of the stuff catching the catchphrase that they put up down the screen by where my dog at, or a dog got to eat, or something like that, or whatever it is. He needs to stay down and get a refresh and maybe become a heel. And I said this a long time ago with you guys. I want him to go full Steiner, and I mean full Scott Steiner. I want you to get the metal on your head. I want you to get everything. Give it a try, since they're trying things in NXT now. Give it a try. Try something different. Add your own spice to it so it can be your own. I would like to see a lot of these people do a little different, even the Tiffany Stratton. Because, again, like I said, I seen the daddy's girl gimmick with Trish Stratus when they hamper her with that. That don't work on the main roster. That's going to make people feel offended. So I want to see a lot of these guys do something different. And I see they keep bringing people back. Johnny Gargano being back and going with Grayson Waller and stuff like that. It's interesting because you bring a Johnny back, because really he's not doing that to WrestleMania weekend. I guess you want to get him some work and give him let him get a payday for being able to work that weekend and stuff like that, and help continue to build your show. That lets me know something about that show. What do you guys feel about that? About that match, how everything going? And this reminds me of the old, when Bo Dallas was talking about how he didn't like NXT, and they finally got him up out of there by having him lose to Adrian Neville. Most people don't remember that name, but Adrian Neville. So this is the same type of storyline rehashed in a different way. What do you guys think about this, and what are you guys' outcome of that whole thing?
So glad to see Gargano back in NXT. I mean, it's been, I think they said 15 months since we've seen him in NXT. You know, when he came back to WWE after having, you know, after their kid was born, you know, I wanted to see him come back to NXT, not necessarily full time, because obviously I wanted him to be able to go up to the main roster, and that's where he deserves to be and all that. But just come back to NXT to kind of finish out his story down there. You know, and kind of have one last, you know, hurrah. So I'm glad to see that finally happening here. The This, you know, I guess let's kind of talk about this whole angle. Obviously, we had the Grayson Waller effect here with here tonight on Roadblock with HBK as his special guest. It looked like he was going to be, he being Grayson Waller, was going to be challenging HBK to a match at Stand and Deliver when HBK declined and said, well, you're going to have a match at Stand and Deliver anyway, and it's going to be against this man. And that's when they brought out Mr. Wrestling himself, Johnny Gargano. So I think this was one of the outcome, the only one of two people that it could have been that wouldn't have been a disappointment if it wasn't HBK. I think everybody wanted to see HBK come out of retirement one more time, at least in the crowd anyway, that, you know, tonight everybody wanted to see it. I want to see that because I would like to see him have one last match that's a banger of a match that isn't that bullshit from Crown Jewel or Super Showdown or whatever Blood Money show that was that they had with the DX versus Brothers of Destruction. I would love to see him have one more match that was just a banger, and that's the end of his career, and it doesn't have to – his last final match doesn't have to be that one. But that's the only reason. You know, I don't think he necessarily has to do it. I don't know if he's in the physical position to actually do it, but that's why I would love to see it. And I think a lot of people kind of share that sentiment. They would like to see that as well. And I think that anybody else that would have come out to take HBK's place in that match would have been a disappointment, other than Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. They are the faces of NXT from NXT Black and Gold. You know, they were synonymous with NXT for years. Obviously, Ciampa, he's still sidelined. He hasn't come back from his, I forget what he just had surgery on, but he had surgery on something. You know, he's still on the injured list. So he's obviously not ready to come back yet. But Gargano, as you said, Darrell, I mean, he's not doing anything for WrestleMania. Perfect time. Bring him back for Stand and Deliver. Have him step into that, you know, into HBK's position in that match, if you will, and basically stand up for NXT against Grayson Waller, who's basically just spent, you know, the last month or so trashing NXT and what Shawn Michaels has done and all of that. I think it's great. I think this is probably the highlight of the show for me. Granted, I'm biased. I'm a huge Gargano fan, so, you know. Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I hear stuff coming out of my computer, and I don't know why. All right, that's weird. I thought some of my headset died, and then you guys are coming out of my computer. Anyway, long story short, I forget where I was going with that, so I'll just leave it with this. You know, I think, like I said, Gargano was one of the few people it could have been that wasn't going to be a disappointment when it was, you know, announced that HBK wasn't going to actually be in the match. I'm looking forward to actually seeing where this goes and actually see the match itself. I'm kind of hoping to see Gargano get a win over Waller. Again, that might be biased because I'm a Johnny Gargano fan. I think it may make actually more sense for Waller to get the win, you know, and kind of give him a bit more of give him more heat and more of a trajectory potentially towards the NXT title. Especially if Melo does wind up switching face as a champion, you know, I think Waller would be a great heel. Plus the two of them have fantastic chemistry together. So, you know, that could certainly be, you know, if it's not the first feud for Melo as champion, you know, that could certainly be a place they go quick. Unless, of course, Waller goes up to the main roster, which is certainly a possibility as well. I'm going to stop flapping my gums now and pass it over to Bruce.
Let's just get this out the way. Best segment of the night, hands down. There is no comparison.
Indeed.
And Waller is just, he's showing why I said almost from the moment I joined this show, that his floor is The Miz. He has, and I think he's much better than The Miz, especially in ring. I think he's going to be someone who is going to be on WWE TV for a decade, two decades, and he's going to have a fine career. And even if The Miz is his floor, two-time Grand Slam champion, all the public stuff that he does, all the money he makes. What Waller did here, it's not just that, what Darrell brought up, you know, bashing on NXT and all that. Waller's, his delivery, his his mannerisms, his facial expressions, he really does seem like he hates being in NXT right now. Even when Shawn Michaels brought up the fact that you lost clean, well, as clean as you can, it's still a cage match, you see his face just fuming at Shawn Michaels. So let me get to the positives here because they're on my head. I think they found the right balance in terms of stringing people along, thinking that Shawn Michaels is going to wrestle versus having someone announced to wrestle on his behalf. I think any more than tonight would have given people the anticipation that Shawn Michaels would wrestle, and an announcement after this would have made it more of a letdown, especially if he came out as Stand and Deliver and they made it seem like he was going to have a match and then they announced someone else to come out. I think what they did here is give people enough time to be like, okay, this makes a lot of sense, and I'm very excited. So I think the only other person that they could have said, and it's because he dropped Undisputed Era earlier in the is Robert Strong, just because he's still there. And
good point.
Undisputed Era, but and that kind of a match, I think, because while Gargano and Ciampa are definitely emblematic of Black and Gold, when I think of the style that I liked during Black and Gold, it's definitely Roderick Strong. So I think he would have been a good stylistic choice in this matter, and I only bring him up again because Michaels dropped Undisputed Era in that promo or in the segment earlier. Before the Gargano was introduced. So I think the match is going to be fantastic. Gargano is an excellent seller, and Waller, what he does well, which is I think something he's learning from Roman Reigns, is how to be your character during a match through what you say and how you look at your opponent. And I think with him and Gargano, we're going to have a fantastic match. Waller, whenever he gets in there, he seems to get better and better. More, when I say better, I mean things just seem to be a little more smooth each time with him. It doesn't seem to be as like he's thinking as much through it, and it's just more fluid. So looking forward to this. Negatives, I really can't say much about how they, aside from Johnny Gargano's new music, I really can't say much about how this segment happened, played out, the end result, and what's going to happen. I guess the only question I have is, if Gargano wins, cool. I'm guessing he's going to go back. What does that mean for Waller then? Does he leave on the sour note? But then again, what happens if Waller wins? Does he use that to come back to Shawn Michaels and say, I should be, you know, I beat your chosen one, I should get the title shot next? I think the possibilities with Waller are very intriguing. And that to me is the fact that there's not just a fantastic match coming up, but those things that are making me think about what's going to happen next, I think is a great sign. And unfortunately, that's not how it is for, you know, the Braun Breakers of the world.
Darrell.
Yeah, I feel like, because I feel like they got him in the Seth Rollins role right now, and they be putting a lot on him to give a little flavor to matches. When he called out the locker room, I felt like they was who they showed in the crowd before was maybe trying to set up for a Dragon versus Dragon Lee match. And I would have liked that match as an introduction to Dragon Lee. And now that he's in the locker room and he's trying to make a splash against somebody who has been fighting for championships and getting a big role right now, I felt like that would have been a better served match because you're bringing in a new guy and telling in a new story and building up a new guy for a guy who you potentially have on the way out. Since I feel like that's what kind of role that they have Grayson Waller in right now, in a Seth Rollins role, since to me, he more of a knockoff of a between a Miz flavor with trying to talk like an MJF, which you know, I don't think he had a flavor of an MJF, but that's how he try to talk when he on the mic. So,
unlike MJF, he doesn't go for low-hanging fruit.
Well, he kind of did in that interview today, especially with the heart attack line.
As Shawn Michaels said, it's true. So I don't know if that's low-hanging fruit as much as a factual statement, whereas MJF is talking about ugly fat people in the crowd and stuff like that all the time, you know?
Pouring drinks on little kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, but MJF is just trying to play off of what he's seen of old Ric Flair and stuff like that. and Gorgeous George and stuff like that. So it's nothing but a play off of what you seen before. It's about how you do it and how the style that you do it. But I would have felt, I felt like, yeah, I like that they brought Johnny back, but I would have preferred, just for the embetterment of NXT as a whole, if you would have used that for somebody like a Dragon Lee, who could potentially have been on the show probably in the first match, and you tell the story of him maybe fighting the Melo in the future. And that's how you start off, by having a banger in the first one and a banger in the last one. But, hey, this is a different NXT. They don't do that no more. And trying to bring memories and stuff that people can recall back from some stuff from before. So, but it was a good segment. Like y'all said, that was the best segment of the night. Great. And Bruce will tell me, and tell you, Nate, that I'm not the biggest Grayson Waller fan, but tonight he almost won me over to start liking him a little bit tonight, just because of that segment and stuff like that. It got me up out of my seat a little bit and had me pay attention. So he almost won me over. But outside of that, ready for them to hurry up and get the Stand and Deliver. Want to see how they're going to build this card out and go further. And it was good talking to you guys. And also, man, some of y'all favorites, man, y'all be liking some C-Miss villains, man. They be more like Calendar Man than the Joker or the Penguin. But it was a good show, man. And I enjoyed talking to you guys, even though I don't come on as much as I used to.
No, and we certainly appreciate him, and we certainly appreciate like having you on the show. So any time you can, feel free to join us.
Yes, sir. And if y'all have something after Stand and Deliver, man, I'll call in or I'll send y'all something in, man, because I'll be there in person.
Sounds good. Sounds good. If we kind of follow our usual protocol, it wouldn't be a call-in show. It would be a roundtable after your VIP roundtable, but you know, certainly send us an email or something. We can certainly read it on air and give your take, or have you call in the following week.
Oh yeah, no problem.
Cool, man. Sounds good. We'll talk to you then.
Yes, sir.
All right. Awesome. So thank you very much, Darrell. Let's go on. We got a bit more to talk about here on the show tonight. So. We've talked a little bit about D'Angelo and Dijak. We've talked a little bit about Breaker. Well, we talked a bit about Breaker Creed versus Mahal and Dushare, but we really didn't get into the meat and the potatoes of the match. So let's talk a little bit about this, shall we? So we did have, like I said, it was Bron Breakker and the Creed brothers versus Dushare and Jinder Mahal. I think this match kind of made sense, kind of throwing Creed and the Creeds and Breakker together against Mahal and Dushare. You know, last week we saw that they're talking about it potentially being a handicap match, and Bron Breakker made the save and inserted himself here into the match. I think it made sense though, because you know, obviously Breakker and Mahal, they were feuding over the NXT title for a little bit, so they had a bit of a feud, and obviously Mahal and Dushare, they're affiliated with one another, so it kind of all made sense to throw them together. The match, I'm not a huge fan of six man tag match. This one was there. I kind of wish the Creeds and Dushare were able to finally have their, tag match that they've been teasing for a while. Months, I feel like, at this point. I'd like to see that finally take place. I don't think we've actually seen that yet, if I'm not mistaken. Keep me honest, Bruce. Yeah, okay, cool. I don't think so. So I think that's, I would have liked to see that rather than throwing Breakker and Mahal in there. I'm hoping we can kind of see that, maybe get to see that in the future. But it is what it is. I think it kind of muddied the waters a little bit, adding those two. A little bit chaotic, frenetic pace for me, but, whatever. I think seeing Breakker in the Creeds was a feel-good story for most people. But I'm also kind of wondering, what this means for Mahal and Dushare. Mahal comes in NXT, makes bold claims that he's going to be the next NXT champion. I mean, I don't think anybody, any one of us thought that he was going to actually win the NXT title, but he also kind of lost in I don't want to say embarrassing fashion. It wasn't embarrassing fashion, but he lost clean. So, you know, what does that necessarily mean now? He's now lost twice to Bron Breakker. You know, Indus Share, I thought they were on great trajectory coming back after they got back together. They reunited once Veer Mahan came back to NXT. So now that they've lost, I think now two matches, if I'm not mistaken, what does that necessarily mean for this faction? Yeah, we got a feel good Bron Breakker and Creed win, but I almost feel like it should have gone the other way to build heat with Mahal and Indus Share. What do you think, Bruce?
Oh, it definitely should have gone the other way. I hate when random teams that just form beat established teams that have been together, even if they've only been together for a short time, like Indus Share. They've been together for at least a couple months. This random team that was just put together last week because apparently the Creed brothers have no other friends in the locker room. I feel like Brutus should have been the one to take the pin here from Veer or Sangha, one of the two. I thought the match legitimately was going to end after they hit the choke slam and lariat combo with Sangha choke slam and Veer's lariat. And
so did I.
Because that's how they ended the match. They ended their match the week before, 2 weeks ago. So when it didn't happen there, I was surprised. Now, okay, Julius probably shouldn't be the one taking the pin, but I think Brutus is the perfect person in that, out of the three of them, to take a pin there.
Agreed.
I did not like this match. I thought anything you're trying to do with Indus Share was just stunted, if not completely diminished. What you did here with Breakker and the Creed, I don't think helped either of the acts. Breakker coming out later in the night and his thing with Carmelo Hayes, I don't think helped either of them, which is sad to say for a Carmelo Hayes segment, but I don't think it was... Oh, and Hayes was on commentary, but I don't think he even said anything. So it was beyond the intro part. Yeah, and so I think this whole match, overall, this whole segment was just a dud. It was not good.
I really wish what they would have done was rather than have Melo and Breakker in that segment later in the night, have Melo cost them the win. Have Melo interfere. He was on that's what I figured was going to happen. He was on commentary. I figured he was going to get involved. Bron Breakker and the Creed's the win. Indus Share, you know, they get their win. And Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes start their feud. I feel like that would bring much more heat to the Melo and Breakker feud, as well as the finish to this match. It seemed weird to me.
Well, look, I will say, I do like the fact that they went against the normal trope that we've become accustomed to in terms of the person that commentary interfering in the match and causing their rival the match. I'll say that. Here, I think you didn't even need to have Hayes interfere. You could have just, like Kelly wrote in his report, this basically became a tornado tag match. There really was no semblance of order, no semblance of balance. It was just, it kept evolving into everyone coming in and hitting each other. So in that context, you could have just had some miscommunication happen between the team, again, that was just put together a week ago and has never teamed before on TV. There could have been some miscommunication, and that could have allowed Brutus to be hit with whatever and take the pin. Beyond that, Vic Joseph had a terrible night on commentary. He was calling moves incorrect names. He called the Doomsday Brutus Bomb about three different things as he was trying to explain it. And then when you pair him with Booker T, it's just not a good combination in general. But yeah, this whole entire thing was just, again, it would have been so easy just to have Brutus take the pin from someone and get more heat on Jinder if you want and do that. But goodness, I'm just kind of roping that Breakker Hayes thing. Like, I was waiting for Hayes to have a one-liner in there to bring Breakker back down because of Hayes' character. And there was just an exchange of pleasantries. And I'm sorry, but for me, this feud was never built on an exchange of pleasantries. It was built on trying to be the best and trying to outdo each other. And sure, you could have some respect in that, but damn, I really thought with how Hayes calls himself, you know, he's I am, and he's the A champion, all that. It just, It really fell flat to me.
It did, and it's not break. It's not his character either. Mello's character. Mello's character is I'm the best. You know, like, and that's not.
I'm gonna put you
did.
On a jersey. Or
yeah,
a t-shirt, you know.
Yeah, exactly, and that's not what he did here tonight. And so I thought that was weird too. Like it, you know, sure, you know, you can certainly respect your opponent, and I think you know that's a well that they should go to. I mean, there have been. You know, a lot of parallels in both of their careers, like they did point out, you know, and like you just said, the entire time that he was the North American champion, Mello was the North American champion, was during Breaker's reign, and he was constantly saying he's the better champ, he's the A champ, my championship's more important. There's a built-in story right there, you know, to kind of piss Breaker off or something like that, you know. So for them to just kind of come out here tonight and, hey, you're awesome. I was
you're
disappointed.
Awesome too.
You're awesome too. Let's fight. It's just like, all right. Where's the investment there? You know, there's nothing to get me invested in this feud. So again, I'm going to give them next week and, you know, see where they go with this. And hopefully they give me a more compelling or give us a more compelling story. But I'm looking forward to this feud. I figured this is where they were going to go for quite some time now. Yeah, we've been talking about Mello potentially being the one to dethrone Breaker for, God, it feels like months and months at this point. So I feel like, you know, this is kind of the natural place that they were going to go. But I didn't think it was going to start this way. I thought it was going to be much, much more heated than this.
And where was Strick? I think Strick really would have added something to this, and maybe would have brought some of that out from Carmelo, because again, it just seemed flat.
Yeah, it really did. You know, I mean, you know, we've Breaker is not the best talker in the world, and I feel like he out-talked Mello, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
They were just
So, all right. Let's put this segment to bed and go back to the phone lines, because we actually do have somebody else that wants to be part of the conversation, and that is area code 615. I'm sure I probably should know the phone number, but it doesn't ring a bell to me at the moment. So let me know who you are and what you thought of the show.
Well, Nate, it's been a while, so I forgive you. This is Sean, your awesome
Sean.
Friend in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. It's been a while. I had to talk to you. Nate, you're awesome. Bruce, you're awesome too, man. How you doing, man? It's been a while.
Hey, we're all awesome.
Hey, awesome. We are the Miz.
No, Sean, good to hear from you, man. Good to hear from you. Glad you're calling in.
Yeah, I know you guys have probably already talked about it, and I'm a little late getting in, so I forgive me if you have, but I wanted to bring it up anyway, just because I thought the main reason I've been a little behind on NXT, as far as other than watching, listening to you guys talk about it, because I've been keeping up with the shows. I haven't been able to watch them as much as I'd like to, but I've been keeping up. And I really was, you know, after you guys talked about going into the Grayson Waller effect tonight, I was like, I have to see this. I have to see how it goes. You know, are they really going to have a, you know, Grayson and Sean get back in the ring just to fight Grayson Waller? I was like, I'm not sure. But in the segment, I was really kind of – I thought I was going to be down on it, but I was actually pretty – I really liked it a lot. And I think Sean really did a good job of, like, you know, Grayson trying to bring down the brand. I'm bigger than the brand. You know, he's doing all the heel stuff. But, like, he's doing a great job as the heel. And Sean's like, no, you know, you're not the brand. You're part of the brand. You're not the brand, blah, blah, blah. And then to bring Gargano, I was not expecting that. If you're not going to have Sean, that's a good – replacement in my mind to have Johnny again. I think Johnny and Grayson are going to have one heck of a match. And the good thing about it is, where do you think they're going in that? Because obviously Johnny's just coming back for an NXT match, so you would assume Grayson's going to win because they want to, you know, build him up even more if he's going to stay on it. Because I don't know. My thought was Grayson was going to move up to the main roster at some point, and I still don't know from what I've seen like when that might be. So do they have – does Grayson just go over because he's obviously been in NXT and Johnny's just coming down for this one match and just have the greatest match they possibly can, which I think that's going to be fantastic. Like, where do you think they're going with that? What did you guys – if you, you know, just what I thought about the segment in general. Like, do you agree with me, or was it like way off? Did you guys not like it at all? Or
so as far as the segment goes, I was pretty high on the segment. I really like how authentic and genuine Waller comes off when he's on the mic. I don't know if they let him just go off the cuff, or if he's just really good at remembering and reciting the things that he's supposed to say. But I really like him on the mic, period. And then obviously put him opposite, you know, Shawn Michaels, who's obviously going to be, you know, a fantastic promo as well. I thought this actually worked very well. The crowd, sometimes I'm not a huge fan of this particular crowd, but man, I thought the crowd was electric for this. I love the fact that they kept singing HBK's theme music after it got cut. It just kind of, they were so excited to see Shawn Michaels, like, cause I thought that was fantastic. Then obviously Shawn Michaels, you know, he's not taking any of the bullshit. He's not allowing Waller to kind of like, you know, walk over him like a lot of authority figures do, which partly played into the tease of him returning to the ring, but I think also kind of, you know, made it that he's a kind of showed that he's a bit of a different leader than some. So again, I appreciated the energy and everything out of Shawn Michaels. Gargano returning, definitely did not see that coming. I did think that, you know, there was a 50-50 shot that, you know, Michaels would accept the match or would have somebody step in his place to, you know, to face Waller. I didn't necessarily see Gargano coming. Matter of fact, when his music hit and, like, I saw Gargano, my arms went up in the air. I think I even shouted yes. Like, that doesn't happen very often for me in wrestling anymore. So, like, I was pretty pumped to see it. We did talk about this a little bit earlier in the night with Ryan, but I think if anybody was going to be named a person to, you know, to kind of take that place of HBK in this match, there were probably two people to do it. Actually, I think three, and I forget who else you brought up, Bruce, because you bring Roderick Strong. He brought Roderick Strong up a little bit ago. Mm-hmm. I think he would be a great choice. Yeah. Because Roderick Strong embodies NXT, black and gold. And he also, in this segment, Shawn Michaels did bring up the Undisputed Era. He's the only Undisputed Era member left in NXT. But there, two other people that came to mind, and these are the first two that came to my mind, was Tommaso Ciampa, and he's on the injured list right now, and Johnny Gargano. I think those two three are really the only three that could have been named here that would not have been a disappointment to the crowd. Otherwise, I don't think they should have even done the tease of Michaels coming back to the ring, because I don't think anything else could have really held a candle to it. And even then, even though I'm like a massive Johnny Gargano fan, it still almost feels like a little bit of a, almost underwhelming, because I still would have liked to see Shawn Michaels come back and have that one last match that wasn't the DX versus Brothers of Destruction match. But that said, Gargano Waller, they're going to have an absolute banger of a match, and Gargano is, I think, the perfect person to kind of fight for the name, you know, the good name of NXT. As far as where it goes after that, your guess is as good as mine at this point. I feel like Gargano is basically going to put Waller over. I don't see him coming down to NXT to necessarily win a match here, unless if it's going to just be a one-off anyway. If it's not going to be a one-off and it kind of goes a little bit, you know, maybe we will see Gargano go over here and then Waller winds up getting a win later on. But as far as anything long-term with Gargano, I think this is really just kind of a way for him to get a payday WrestleMania weekend, because he's not necessarily doing anything on the main roster for WrestleMania. But I don't necessarily think it's going to be anything, you know, super long-term. Bruce, let me throw to you.
Yeah, so we've talked about this a lot, so I don't want to belabor the point too much. To answer your point about where this goes, that was my big question too. Because, and I think that's the best thing coming out of this, is that there are so many questions about what happens next. You assume that Gargano would be here to put Waller over, but with his angle, I could certainly see Gargano getting the victory over Waller and he becoming even more incensed and trying to just run, basically trying to get fired, basically, you know, because he hates NXT so much. So that could, that's definitely a possibility that could happen. I do think that the traditional role of Gargano coming down, putting over Waller, would have a story of Waller being able to rub that in Shawn Michaels' face, saying, I beat your chosen boy, your golden child. I'm the best NXT wrestler. I'm the biggest superstar. I should be champion, yada, yada. So I think that they could do that. But I think I'm more intrigued with the fact, or with the possibility of him losing to Gargano and then using that to basically go into Berserker mode and turn NXT into his own little, basically like he's a one-person NWO running roughshod on the organization, kind of like they did in 96 or so, or 97. So I think that is the two most likely things I see coming out of the match. But again, the fact that we're discussing the possible outcomes rather than the actual match itself, I think is a good thing for professional wrestling, because the storyline, the angles are why we're invested. The matches are there to help tell those stories, right? I think someone said, to equate it, if I got it right, it was that the story is the stake and the wrestling is the season, to make the stake that much better. Or maybe I have it backwards. But one of those two, whatever makes it work best for you, basically. But the story is why we're here, and I think that is what makes this even more
palatable.
Well, not just palatable, but it makes you want to come back to see what's going to happen more than just anything, especially more than anything else that happened on the show tonight.
Yeah, no, I agree. It, you know, and it's funny you bring that up. You know, a lot of people do watch wrestling for the stories, not necessarily for, you know, for the action. I mean, you know, me, I'm the type of fan, I kind of watch for both. You know, I'm not necessarily one that's going to sit there and, I mean, I guess I do, you know, because I'm part of this show and it's part of my job here to kind of nitpick and analyze. But, you know, when I'm just kind of watching as a fan, I'm not necessarily nitpicking and analyzing the match and all of that. I'm kind of just there and invested in the story of the match and the storylines going on. Tom Stout, you know, he said many times on this very show, he could care less about the wrestling. He's there for the story. I mean, obviously he cares a little bit about the wrestling, but you know, his primary reason for being a wrestling fan are the stories that are being told. And I think I think this is certainly one of the better ones, coming out of Roadblock. I think it was Darrell. Somebody earlier tonight was talking about, you know, memorable moments. It was Darrell. You talk about memorable moments, and I think this is the memorable moment coming out of this show. I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, it could have potentially been Perez's win over Mako Satomura if she didn't collapse afterwards. I think Gargano's return here is probably going to be that YouTube moment that gets replayed, if any, on the show. So I hope that kind of touches on what you were talking about, Sean, but let me throw it back to you with any follow-up or another topic.
No, it's fine. I figured you guys had, you know, already talked, and I'll go back and listen, you know, and find out what you guys actually said about the segment itself. The one thing I wanted to bring up, too, was I know it was at the very beginning of the show, but I really like when they just kind of interview Roxanne like that backstage. And, like, she just – I know she – but you could tell she's so young, like, when she has her promos, like, about the matches. But, like, they're just so genuine. I just really like when she has these genuine, like, I'm nervous, I'm anxious, but I'm ready to defend my title. I'm going to do whatever it takes to hold on to this title. Like, it just you can see how much it means to her, and it just – it's just, I really like that. It's just basic, but it's so good to me. I really enjoy those. And I just, you know, I was excited about that going into that match. But then I wanted to talk real quick about the JC, Jane, Gigi Dolan match.
We have to.
Well, I'm sorry. I wanted to bring it up because I really like, you know, I like what they've done. Like, they were trying to build that feud up, and I think they did an okay job of building it up, like, the kind of the hatred between them. Like, that was okay. But, yeah, the match was just, it was not good. And I think Gigi,
yeah,
JC, I thought has gotten a little better. Like, you know, it's not saying a lot, I guess. Gigi, I think, has talent. So I was just, like, thinking there might do something a little bit better. But the question is, you know, how obviously you guys thought it was as bad as I did, and that's kind of unfortunate. But how – where do they go from here? Because I do think Gigi's the more talented of the two, but I just don't think this match helped either one of them, honestly.
No, it didn't. And, you know, this is something that I've been wondering what was going to happen once they got here, because – when we, you know, going back to the last pay-per-view, what was it, the Valentine's Day pay-per-view, Vengeance Day, the triple threat match that they had with Roxanne Perez, the match wasn't bad, but any time that it was just the two of them, you know, JC Jane, Gigi Dolin in the ring together, and Roxanne Perez wasn't, you know, wasn't part of that, you know, that spot or whatever, it was clear that the two of them did not have chemistry together. Neither one of them, I feel like, is the best wrestler in the world. But get them two of them together, and man, it just did not seem to work. And I felt like that was the case here tonight as well. This match, very clunky. I don't know if I would say it was as clunky as their spots during the triple threat. I'd have to go back and watch it, but it was still clunky nonetheless.
It felt worse.
What's that?
It definitely felt worse watching it tonight. It felt worse.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly may have been. I might have been a little bit optimistic, but like I said, I have to go back and watch it. But it, you know, it if it was any better, it wasn't much better. You know, that said, this is pretty much exactly what I expected for this match to be. You know, I feel like the offense, none of it really felt like it was, you know, that brutal. I felt like a lot of times it was just a clunky dance, not necessarily a fight. And that's a problem. That's a problem. I've definitely seen that with other opponents that they've had as well. But I think when just the two of them, I don't feel like they've got chemistry together, which is surprising because I feel like where they've been a team for so long, I don't know. You're probably practicing with one another, you know. I don't know. I mean, I've never been in a wrestling locker room outside of, like, you know, visiting people at a show. But, you know, so I don't necessarily know how that's going to work. But I don't know. I feel like they should have more chemistry than they actually do. It was very, very clunky. Where they go with this in the future, I just want to see the two of them get away from one another as fast as possible. I feel like, you know, after Mandy Rose left the company, the whole Toxic Attraction thing just felt really flat. So I'm glad they kind of broke them up as you know, pretty quickly after she left. Because, you know, Mandy was clearly the star of that that faction. So I'm hoping at this point they get away from each other quick. I don't think that's going to be the case after the, you know, with the post-match angle here where Jason Jane attacked Gigi Dolin after Gigi Dolin picked up the win. I feel like we're probably going to see at least one more match between these two, potentially at Stand and Deliver, or at least some other angle to blow this off. Because you know, it seemed like they were going to have something else with, you know, like just based on that post-match angle. But I think the best thing for them would be to get away from one another and to start growing themselves as singles competitors outside of this Toxic Attraction bubble. Cause I don't think it's doing either one of them any favors right now, Bruce.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I noted was that they didn't even give Gigi Dolin a TV entrance. So that tells you
right?
They're higher on. Even
that
though
was horrible.
Yeah.
I was so mad about that.
JC's heel turn has been great in her character, but it did not translate to the ring. The match was not fun to watch. I think the biggest sin of this match is what Kelly wrote in his report. For a feud that was built like a blood feud, they kind of worked it like a regular-ass wrestling match. And I've been saying for weeks since the breakup, JC keeps talking about being the last woman standing from Toxic Attraction. The eventual endgame is going to be a last woman standing match between the two. They didn't have to have this before Stand and Deliver. They could have just written someone out with an attack somewhere. And, you know, they could have had this match scheduled and then have JC attack Gigi and write her out for a month, and then or however long, and then the 2 weeks before Standard Deliver, have her attack JC and talk about and then cut a promo saying, "You talk about being the last woman standing from Toxic Attraction. Well, you and me, Standard Deliver, last woman standing match." I think it's all set there, but doing this made it more clunky, and they could have avoided all this just by not having the match or having some kind of, as I said, injury angle, or not injury angle, a beatdown angle beforehand. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm just not that excited to see the rest of this.
No, me either. And, you know, as I actually said earlier tonight, last man standing match is like one of my least favorite stipulations. I feel like, you know, the finish, those just lacking drama because you're basically waiting for a 10 count. So I don't want to see that, period. And you're right, you know, and you brought this up before, actually, on the show before tonight, you know, them going, bringing up, you know, that Jane is the last woman standing in Toxic Attraction and all of that. So that's potentially where they're going here. Makes sense. I hope it's not where they're going, but makes sense. I don't want to see them in another match, period. I kind of wish they did gloss over this pay-per-view, or PLE, I should say, and just went straight to Stand and Deliver with it. But whatever, kind of is what it is. Hopefully it's the end of it at Stand and Deliver. Then they move away from each other and hopefully can start to grow a single career on their own. You know, I definitely think there's talent there in both of them. I think Dolan has more than Jane. And I agree with you, Bruce. I think Jane is, her character development has been great. It's just not there in the ring, where I feel like Dolan, her character's, I think, been great for a while. She's been great on the mic, but she is definitely better in the ring. I think she's the one that they should focus on more, but we'll see. Seems like it might be Jane that they have their eye on. So, Sean, let's head back to you.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to bring up, and I will say this because you brought it up, it's totally fine. I knew Roxanne was going to win. I haven't seen the match yet. I'm a little behind, but I knew Roxanne was going to win. So don't feel bad. Don't that you said it, because I was anticipating she was going to win. I'm excited to go back and watch the match though and see how it transpired. But so I just wanted you not to feel bad, because I was coming on knowing that I might hear something about it, but I knew that Roxanne was going to win, so it didn't like surprise me. But
well, hey,
I will say,
you still. Even though you know that, there's still a surprise at the end for you that I won't bring up.
Oh,
so.
Cool. Oh, nice. Awesome. Even better. No, I like that. I want to say, just at the very beginning, well, I did say, I will say real quick, I didn't really care for the Dijak-D'Angelo match. I just don't like that kind of match. I just don't think that's – I don't enjoy watching them try to close the door on each other. I just think that's – I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't really care for that. The match, it was fine, but it was like, eh. And I think – I like Dijak a little bit more, so I was kind of hoping he would go over. But I see why D'Angelo won. I think they see something in him. And he's good. I don't dislike him. I think there could be a little more in Dijak down the road, but we'll see. But with Tiffany Stratton, just her at the beginning of the show, like leading into the show, like she's a star, man. She comes across as a star.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was
by far.
Fun listening to her. And, like, just, I mean, she's already an attractive woman anyway, but just watching her on the show and seeing the star power she has, she's gotten better in the ring over time. Like, she's not great yet, but she's getting better. Like, she's going to be a star in the making for sure, so I just wanted to bring that up. But, Nate, both you and Bruce are awesome. You guys did a great job, and I just wanted to call because I know I don't get a chance to a lot of times because I'm getting home late, but I wanted to get on real quick, and I appreciate all you guys do. Thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
All right, Sean. Great to hear from you, man. Great to hear from you. Anytime you can call in, feel free and join the conversation. So appreciate
it. I've always got to toot my own horn for being on the Waller and Hayes and Stratton trench from the very beginning before people caught on to them. So.
Oh yeah, no, you were. I know at first, like when with Tiffany Stratton,
you weren't on board.
I did not. Definitely did not see it at first. It took a while. Carmelo Hayes, I saw back in the breakout tournament. I just didn't know what they were going to do with him. But I remember, because it was before you joined the show, I was talking, so it was Tom and Kelly, and I remember both of them going like, "Yeah, he just seems like very, like, I don't know, plain, like, you know," and I'm like, he might seem plain, but I know the school he comes from, and I see something there. I see, but the character development obviously didn't come until 2.0, but I do remember that first match of the breakout tournament and just being like, dude, there is something there with Melo. I don't even remember how the hell we got there. Oh, yeah, because we wanted to toot our horns. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. There we go. All right. Toot, toot. There we go. Horns have been tooted. So we've talked about J.C. Jane and Gigi Dolan. That was the next thing we were going to talk about, so perfect. So I think the last thing we haven't talked about is Andre Chase versus Joe Gacy, which also just kind of existed here on the show for me tonight. We've seen Chase University and Schism in a bit of a feud over the last few weeks, kidnapping Thea Hale, kind of a host of other backstage segments and things. So obviously we saw the two leaders of the factions come to blows here tonight. Joe Gacy did pick up the win over Andre Chase, which I feel like makes the most sense here. On Chase University, they are the underdogs. They're always the ones fighting from underneath to try and win. And as Duke Hudson pointed out a little bit later on in the night, they're perennial losers. They're always losing. Heck, to the point where they're giving out awards just for a single win. Kind of called themselves pathetic. I'm kind of curious to see what happens with Chase University after this segment here tonight. Maybe they step their game up, or if Hudson finally winds up leaving Chase University and we kind of, we finally see the Chase, Andre Chase and Duke Hudson feud, come to a head or something like that. But I think it makes the most sense for Schism to go over here. They are the ones that are kind of being sort of billed as a menacing force to be reckoned with, but they're not really coming across that way. They're effectively a lower mid-card team, maybe a mid-card team, but a lower mid-card team. I kind of felt like this entire feud is just who's the best of the losers, to be honest with you, to kind of give you a little bit of a baseline of where I was coming into this match. The match itself wasn't necessarily bad. I mean, Andre Chase and Joe Gacy, they're decent workers. So the match wasn't bad, but again, this is a lower mid card feud. Basically, this was like, I felt like this was the bathroom break before the main event. Maybe that's a bit of an overstatement, but that was the spot it was in anyway. Joe Gacy did, like I said, he picked up the win over Andre Chase here. Don't know really what else to say here that haven't already talked about. So, Bruce, let me throw it over to you to see if there's anything else.
The best part about this was Duke Hudson's speech to them at the end in the backstage segment, because it was factual. It was coming from a place that made it sound authentic. And beyond that, I thought it was notable that you could hear parts of the crowd cheering with Duke as he was just lambasting Andre Chase and Thea Hale for basically being okay with losing. And I think that's a sign that people want Chase U to be more than just the lovable losers. And I think that's a good sign for them. But the thing is, are you actually going to do anything with that? We should also mention that the big point of this match was Thea. So before the match, Thea Hale was doing some meditation techniques or some calming techniques with Tyler Bate. And she used that to confront Ava at ringside during the match, screaming at her that she's not afraid. She gave a high five to Chase, which allowed Gacy to hit the upside down lariat to win the match. That's what led to the Hudson segment in the back. This whole Duke Hudson thing, though, I just want everyone to remember, Mr. HKCU has gone through so many variations from the sneaky teacher's pet who's seemingly trying to undermine Chase to make the guy who looks like he's trying to take Hale away to now the guy who's full-on gung-ho Chase U. I think there's been too many arcs with him without enough explanation as to how he got to each of these parts. But beyond that, I think the next step in this story, beyond, Thea Hale versus Ava and Ava's first match or the mixed tag team match down deliver with Gacy and possibly at this point Hudson and Gacy, or Hudson and Hale instead of Gacy and Hale, it's what does Hudson's speech actually do to the two of them? Do they change? Do they become more serious? Does Chase take his cussing you out teacher in the room and actually bring that to the ring and become more aggressive and authoritative? We'll see. But yeah, I think the match was just there, and I just can't find myself getting into Schism at all. So
yeah,
unfortunately for them, that's just how it's going to be until something happens that drastically changes what they are.
I know all I see when I look at Schism is the Grizzled Young Vets and what they should be. it almost pains me to see them as the dyad and not as GYV. They're just so much less than they could be. But whatever, it is what it is. The faction itself, I feel like, is certainly in a better spot than it was. You know, before Ava Rain joined the faction, I mean, you know, we've had, in terms of like looks and everything, you know, with the apparel changes and things, but you know, we're still only seeing them, you know, maybe 2 out of 4 weeks, on NXT, and you know, they're not necessarily in notable spots. I'd like to see. I mean, Joe Gacy at one point, you know, he was an NXT title challenger, you know, he was challenging Bron Breakker. And now, you know, like I said, I mean, he's kind of a lower mid-carder. You know, he's the leader of a lower mid-card stable. So I would, if they're going to continue on with Schism, they need to do something to get us to care more about them. Because I'm right there with you. There's really not much that they're doing with Schism right now to actually make anybody invested whatsoever. So I don't know, and you'd think with somebody like Ava Rain, The Rock's daughter, they would want to give a little bit more prominence to that. I don't know, maybe not, especially if she's not ready for that spot, but if they're putting her on TV in a stable, they must feel like she's ready for a spot. So I don't know, I capitalize on it. I don't know. They might have their reasons for it, but that's at least my two cents anyway. All right. With that, I think that is going to bring us to the end of our show. So I am Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses. And as I said earlier tonight, I do have one up on pwtorch.com for NXT Roadblock. One thing I did forget to say earlier in the night, and I really should bring this up at the beginning of the show. If you want to be part of the show, as our callers were tonight, you can get a hold of us, 515-605-9345. Press 1 to enter our caller queue, or you can email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Bruce, who are you?
Bruce Lee Angelus, I'm on Twitter at B_Lee253.
All right, guys. With that, we will see you next week. Take care.